助けてほしいかナナミ。
心を燃やせ、限界を超えろ。
Hello and welcome to More Than Headlines, your weekly anime news podcast powered by Audio Technica, made by Australians for global citizens. I'm your extremely humble host, Brenda White, aka the Salt and Pepper Senpai, and joining me in the studio, my trusted co-host and rival, the Spike Spiegel to my Jet Black, Mr. Courtney Smith. How the bloody hell are ya?
I'm good. I feel like it's always a bittersweet time when we're kind of coming to the end of a season. At the same time, you know, like we're finishing one season, but we're going into the next. And it's this real, I guess, like transition phase where we're finishing anime and starting new ones and trying to reflect, but also like you have to start watching immediately. Otherwise, you're going to fall behind straight away. So it's a bit strange, but I'm good. I'm going well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. Like, it's tough because it's a reflective moment in our lives as anime consumers, yet we don't get any time to mourn and reflect and analyze. Well, I guess we're analyzing a little bit here on the podcast today, but yeah, we don't get any time to catch a breath. It's like the spring season has begun and yet some of the winter anime is still yet to sort of arrive at their complete point. So it is daunting. Like, it's first world problems. I know, woe is us anime fans. But yeah, like, give us a minute, anime people out there, please. God damn.
Yeah, I want like a machine that I can go inside and it's like time just stops until I catch up on all of my anime from the previous season and I can like come out of the machine and I'm like, okay, I'm fresh. I'm ready for the new season.
That would be fantastic because, yeah, this last week has been very rushed and very daunting. Like, for those that are stopping on by, first and foremost, thank you if it is your first time. What the bloody hell took you so long? But, yeah, what this episode's going to be, we aren't going to be tackling the anime news, even though I lied about that in the intro drop. This is going to be our review of the 2025 winter season. So we're going to be unpacking a slew of anime that we've both watched, some that I haven't watched and Courtney has and vice versa. So we've got a ton of anime we're going to be talking about. No news, just recapping the good, the bad and everything else in between. So yeah, we're going to go deeper, I guess, the higher up the list we get, like the closer we get to our irrespective, you know, top of the winter seasons, that's where the nice hearty conversation is going to come because I am a psychopath. I'm a sucker and I've sort of worked my way through 27 different anime this winter season. So some are only going to get a very fleeting response because that's all they deserve. Oh, that average.
Yeah, 27 is a lot. And I feel like even at the height of my anime watching when I was at uni and I had so much time, I feel like I watched maybe like a max of 25, 27, like pushing 30 is a lot of anime. And honestly, looking at your reviews, I don't think I missed very much.
You really didn't. And now that we've sort of vocalized that number, I've realized it is 30 because there's also three ongoings I've watched as well. So send help. I'm blinking repeatedly because I am in a situation I don't want to be in. But no, I've tried to improve for the spring season. I've scaled that list from 30 down to 20. So hopefully it's going to be a lot better on my mental health and also just my general time or lack thereof. Like, hopefully I have a bit more free time to do other things and embark on another hobby. Who the heck knows, Courtney?
Also, I love this little sweater situation you've got going on.
Oh, yeah, you love this one? So
yeah.
I forgot. I bought this online. I got randomly targeted on like an Instagram ad. This is from a website called Soap and Sun. Uh-huh. And I bought it like maybe 4 months ago and it never arrived, but that's because they didn't ship to Australia. So I got it drop shipped to like my post box in America and just forgot about it. So I was back and forth with the website maybe a month ago saying, hey, where's my sweater? It's fantastic. For the audio based listeners, it's just like a gray, like a heather gray sweater, but it's got our fantastic Turbo Granny sort of stitched in. So this is stitched in just a really simple rectangular panel right in the middle, just giving us the side eye. Like, I love it. It's so great. And it just arrived yesterday. So this is fresh out the package and it feels nice. So shout out to Soap and Sun.
Wow, so cute. I love that.
Yeah. It is a good time. But yeah, this episode's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to getting your thoughts and opinions, good, bad, or otherwise, on the anime that you've been consuming this past quarter, this past season. You know, the winter season has come and gone. And yeah, we're looking forward into spring. But What do you think? Should we jump on in?
Let's do it.
Okay, so we've broken it up into sort of little bite-sized chunks, and in between said bite-sized chunks, we're doing our first sort of ever seasonal awards as well. So we won't sort of spoil what these award categories are until we get there, but we thought it'd be a nice way to break up getting from, you know, the bad all the way through to the amaze, because, you know, that's my very specific, very accredited and approved scientific metric with how I do anime there. So for those that don't know, it's based off five thresholds: bad, mid, good, great, and amaze. And so I've sort of broken it down into those. And I'm going to start things off with my number 27 of my winter watch list, and that's I'm Living with an Otaku Neat Kunoichi. And all I've got to say, this is indeed an anime, Courtney. That's all I've got for this. Like, this was not a good time. I didn't finish it. I dropped out at about episode 7, and that was probably maybe 5 episodes too long because it was a punish, it was unenjoyable, and there's not really any redeeming qualities to this one.
No comment.
Okay. All right, let's keep moving. We're going to jump into number 26, Tasakare Hotel. I dropped this one as well after a handful of episodes. Icky animation, and I just could not care about this world or the characters, but I thought the premise, reading the synopses, sounded cool and interesting, but it was anything but for me.
So this one I didn't watch, but I did want to comment and say when I was going through the winter season lineup 3 months ago, I really considered putting this on my list. Like, it was very close to going on my watch list. And oh my God, I'm so glad I left it off, because number 26 of 27, that's brutal.
Yeah, it's brutal. And I'm sure there's some fans out there that really enjoyed this viewing of Tasakare Hotel. But yeah, it just was not for me. I really, really struggled and I had to put it down. The next one, my number 25, Grisaia Phantom Trigger. Licorice Recoil, it was not, Courtney. Like, I was hoping that we could get like Licorice Recoil Light. It was not even that. And yeah, it was a tough watch that I did not care for the entire way through. All right, my number 24. Everyone loves a good isekai. Headhunted to Another World, from Salaryman to Big Four. The use of sales and business strategy was a nice wrinkle to a very tried and true and oversaturated formula, but this fell right into the bucket of forgettable isekai.
God, once again, just glad I didn't even look at it twice.
Yeah, like, the more you sort of stand strong and have like the flag planted as being a I wouldn't say a fantasy hater, but like, you are very resistant to a lot of fantasy anime. And because that, this one itself, as far as Headhunter to Another World, falls right into that fantasy with that isekai flavor, I understand why you are very resistant to check these out, because, again, like, I couldn't really tell you what I took out of this apart from, oh, cool, some business acumen that maybe I could utilize in a sales presentation in once or twice in my lifetime. All right, so I'm going to move to my number 23. Anyway, I'm Falling in Love with You. Anyway, I wish I didn't watch all 12 episodes of this very hollow nonsense. I could not give two shits about this, and I love love.
Oh, okay. I also watched Anyway, I'm Falling in Love with You. It isn't my least favorite of the season. It's my second least favorite, which kind of says something. But just a strange reverse harem anime. And it had all the makings of a great show. Like, the premise was really good. The, like, you know, kind of reflecting back and kind of reliving your past, seeing how you could have been better. I like the premise. It just really struggled to prove itself in what we have, which is a sea of these like amazing shoujo romance fish anime that I love. Like, it just couldn't stick it.
Yeah, it was one of the fish that, like, you have it on the hook and as you're winding it up, a shark comes and, like, bites it. So when you land it on the boat, the fish is, like, half dead, half alive and only half itself. That's what this is. Like,
yeah,
just put it out of its misery and put me out of it, my misery, because, yeah, it was a tough, tough watch. My number 22, from bureaucrat to villainess, Dad's Been Reincarnated. It started fun, but it was a little mid. Ended up a lot less fun and a lot more mid.
Yeah, I actually had this a little bit higher on my list, only because the very beginning of the series started out really, really strong. Kenzaburo, the guy that's been reincarnated, he's a great dad, even after he dies. When it stopped being about him cosplaying a villainess and it was just about the fantasy game characters, it really lost a lot of its charm.
Yeah, I did respect and appreciate a lot of the life lessons he was trying to give to these other characters he was about, but yeah, it just didn't hit for me. Number 21, and it's not because this was like offensive or terrible, but Welcome to Japan, Miss Elf. It was very inoffensive. It was very cozy, but it was super forgettable. There wasn't really much drama or hooks for me to sort of get engrossed in and enthralled in. Decently animated, a fun, cute, sweet story with you know, a guy that keeps sort of dreaming about being in this fantasy world, and then one day he sort of wakes up and pulls through the one of his sort of offsiders, this busty, gorgeous sweetheart of an elf. She ends up in Japan. They end up, you know, just experiencing Japan and doing the touristy thing and whatnot. So sort of a reverse isekai in a way, but yeah, it was fine, but like I'm never going to rewatch it. No way.
I feel like it tried to be Otaku Elf from a few years back, which I adored. I loved Otaku Elf. It's like Umaru-chan, except instead of just like a gamer nerd high schooler, she's an elf. And that was fantastic. And I think this tried to be the same thing, but once it's been done once, I feel like it's really hard to replicate.
Yeah, very, very, very true. And okay, my number 20, this was sort of at the bottom of the barrel for a lot of this season for me. Like anyone that's checked out any episodes of More Than Headlines have known that we've probably been beating this one more than others as far as from a negativity perspective. And I've got it now at number 20 of this list because it did manage to claw itself back a little bit with the sort of back third of the season. We're talking about Zenshu. Really, 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 really good animation at points, especially when we're seeing sort of the mangaka artist ability sort of take shape on screen. I think it had one of the best openings of the season as well, a real toe tapper. Even the ending was very pretty and a little bit more subdued. But outside of that, it was very, very, very boring fantasy filled with forgettable and very unlikable characters. And that was one of my biggest bugbears. Like, I hated the majority of the people that they introduced to me throughout the entirety of this run. And it was very punishing to watch due to those unlikable characters that are meant to be heroes in this world. I did appreciate the romance that got sprinkled in, and I felt that that did elevate it ever so slightly, but it was very much too little too late for me.
Yeah. So Zenshu for me is at the very bottom of my list. I literally every week it came on and I was like, great, Zenshu's on. Time to put it on in the background while I do something else. And I would put it on dubbed because I was not paying attention at all. I tried to give it the benefit of the doubt, thinking, you know, MAPPA's behind it. Maybe like it's an original. Maybe they have some good ideas. No, they don't. MAPPA stapled its name to it and we all fell for it. Happy April Fool's Day.
And I feel like, yeah, if this was any other studio or one of the sort of like B tier is probably a harsh thing to say, but I guess like the lesser known, the less mm-hmm. heavy of the hitters of the studios out there, if they did Zenshu, it probably wouldn't have got as much criticism as it has out there, because MAPPA's just got such an expectation attached to anything they do, whether that be fair or unfair, that's up for people to debate. But yeah, I was so hyped for this, and then it just sort of fell really, 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 really flat right from the rip. And yeah, like I said, the romance at the end pulled itself back a little bit for me because, you know, a big softy like myself just enjoyed that. But yeah, it was a tough watch. And I guess that can sort of shift into our first little award for the winter season. And this award we're calling Have Guts, No Glory, biggest disappointment of the season. The anime that we've just been talking about is my biggest disappointment of the 2025 winter season. Zenshu, oh, what could have been?
I'm going to say something that is going to be really controversial. My biggest disappointment from this season was My Happy Marriage season 2. I fell asleep so many times watching this. I couldn't get into it. And I'll talk more about it a bit later, but it just was not it for me.
That hurts my heart a little bit. I will admit and say that I can understand, especially with the first maybe 3 to 4 episodes, it was very slow and snail-paced and just was lacking that hook. But yeah, we'll talk more about it soon, but I feel it really redeemed itself by the back end. Like, we still haven't watched the season 2 finale because there's been some delays regarding the production, so it's coming out sometime in the near future. They haven't given us any date or any form of timeline, so we don't know when we're going to see how this season 2 wraps. But where we've gotten to, I've been vibing it. But yeah, we'll keep things moving. So we're looking at like, I've sort of blocked this into maybe the mid to sometimes good tier, potentially could be some bad too, because there was some eyebrow raising moments here. So my number 19, Beheneko, the elf girl's cat, is secretly an S-ranked monster. There were times while watching this where all I could think about was being reincarnated as Tama because of reasons. That's all I will say.
Yep, we're not exploring that any further. What's number 18, Brendan?
My number 18, it started with a lot of promise and I was really vibing with it to begin with, but it's, as you can see, taken a tumble down my rankings here. Madaka Kurioa is impervious to my charms. It peaked very early with lots of laughs and lots of fan service, which felt good. It felt like it wasn't too heavy-handed with that kind of stuff, but then it just proceeded to really coast to its conclusion. I love me a Gyarado, hate me a dub Gyarado, but Mona and Madaka just didn't do it for me at the end of the day. Like, it was just a very mid-tier anime. Some people probably really enjoyed it, but yeah, 18 on my list.
Yeah, I remember you talking about this one quite a bit at the beginning of this winter season, and just very slowly you talked about it less and less until you just stopped talking about it.
Yeah, yeah, the proof here is in the fan service-y shape pudding. So yeah, number 18 on my listings. My number 17, the daily life of a middle-aged shopper in another world. Being a fellow 38-year-old male, it brought me a lot of comfort in knowing that I too could start life again and be happy and successful. And I want to shout out Kenichi and his excavator. That's all I'm going to say.
You are happy and successful. Brendan, you don't need to become a middle-aged online shopper in another world.
I'm already that without the other world part. Like, that is me already. I'm just waiting to get like hit by a truck and then sucked into a fantasy world. Like, that sounds very morbid saying it out loud, but I'm waiting for my sort of fantasy world reincarnation or do-over. But yeah, I'm ready because I'm checking all the boxes that Kenichi does, even if he does get a little too skeezy at times behind his sort of nice, innocent, business-like mentality. So that's my number 17.
Yeah, boy.
My number 16, Ubelblatt. It was sort of sitting in the 20s for the beginnings of this viewing journey of the winter season. Ended up being a perfectly average medieval fantasy revenge story. Right bang smack in the middle just about of all my viewings here, because it was mid, it was sometimes good, but it was very forgettable.
Yep, this one, glad I skipped, did consider it, but good to see that it landed exactly where it needed to, I think.
And the next one, my number 15, Castlevania Nocturne Season 2, a weak and bizarrely paced follow-up to Season 1 that was heavily carried by its sexy gothic aesthetic and love stories.
Rip.
Yeah, it was such a shame because I love the animated Castlevania universe and then obviously the spin-off with Nocturne. I thought that first season was fantastic, but this was just really watered down and the pacing was a bit iffy and I just couldn't care.
Yeah, I'm going to go into your number 14 because this for me was my, still in the bad tier for me, Honey Lemon Soda. This is my 12 of 14 that I watched. This is only beating Anyway I'm Falling in Love with You because I physically burst out laughing at some of the things the characters did that weren't intentionally funny. Like, it was just a The Room situation where I was watching this. I was like, what? Who thought of this?
Oh, hi, Kai.
Literally. Oh, hi, Mark.
Yeah, so Honey Lemon Soda, that's my number 14. Completely agreeing with what Courtney said, like very uneven and very disappointing. Like, we were preemptively singing its potential praises when we were sort of previewing this season. I thought it could be one of the hits of the season. Very wrong on that. Massive misstep on my behalf there. Instead, I wanted to sleep through maybe the first two thirds of this season. Like, it was a tough watch. I really didn't like the characters. Uka and her underdog story, I can root for someone for only so long until it's like, just get out of your own way and like do something, please. And luckily, I feel it really ended strongly and seeing her genuinely come into her own and sort of step up and say some big things and do some big things, like that was cool. But also, like, I couldn't help but think after this first season ended, even the nice ending, like I'm avoiding spoiling anything, but even with sort of like the nice Honey Lemon Soda tasted like ending, Kai is kind of a dick, hey?
You know, okay, this series, I feel like we could do like a Ghost Stories type dub of it. Oh, like,
yes.
I just think of the scene, I think it's in like episode 6 or 7, where they're on their school trip doing their walk and they get lost in the forest and someone just like
it was so dumb.
Flips the sign. I'm like, guys, how are you so dumb? Like, I know you're teenagers, but come on, man. Like, it's not. Oh, anyway.
I love like low stakes scenarios that anime tries to make like high stakes world ending types of situations like that, where it's like there was a fork in the road. You went right, go back and go left. Like, problem solved, crisis averted. Everyone can be happy, but like, no, let's create some unnecessary menial drama. And there was a lot of that in Honey Lemon Soda.
Sour.
Yes. Yeah. And the animation still really got me, especially when it was side profile. I hated it. Anytime they turn to the side, I'm like, oh, turn back, get away. You're scaring me.
It's like looking at what those sunfish.
Yeah. That's exactly how it was. Oh, I hated it. But I will say episode 11 was gorgeous. Like, it was the strongest episode animation and art style wise. And I thought, oh, maybe they've pivoted and then they still turn sideways. I was like, ah, you lulled me into a false sense of security. So Honey Lemon Soda, number 14 on my winter watch list. My number 13, I may be a guild receptionist, but I'll solo any boss to clock out on time. Fun, enjoyable fantasy, decent combat. I liked sort of the reimagining of fantasy where we're focusing on just one of the, you know, one of the quest givers and the admin girl here. Like, Alina Clover, fantastic. Talk more about her later. Loved her as a character. Loved it. Like, all she wanted was just a nice, simple life. So she's just, you know, doing her 9-to-5 entry-level job, and yet all these hunters and adventurers around her are just useless. So she's dealing with sort of the constant incompetence, goes and does it herself in the end because she masquerades as the executioner, which is, you know, a badass adventurer that can just one-shot everybody. So I like that sort of dynamic and the duplicity of, like, she's just the entry-level front counter girl handing out and dealing with the admin, and then also she's the only one that can do these big quests and take down all these bosses. So I like that. It was funny, it was inoffensive, had a bit of heart, decently animated. I thought the opening, it's weird because the opening is gorgeous and very like watercolor-esque in the art style. And if they sort of did a whole season of that, like, I think it would have further elevated it. But it was weird because it was so pretty. The anime itself was fine, but yeah, it was definitely carried by a gorgeous introduction. But yeah, an MC that I rooted for very hardly.
And it's really relatable because, like, who among us wouldn't do anything we could to leave work on time?
Exactly, exactly. So I like that there was some, like, relatability here, even though we're in a fantasy world with demons and dungeons and stuff. So I think that was kind of cool. My number 12, Dr. Stone. I've decided, Courtney, that this anime is 1,000,000,000% carried by cool science and hot characters. Enjoyable, but very much the weakest season so far that I feel was let down by a very weak assortment of villains lacking any sort of depth or intrigue. Like, this, I'm thankful because it was like a simul drop with the sub and the dub, because this was like Zenshu, where I didn't have to give it my 110% concentration to understand what's going on. I could go about my evening, have Dr. Stone on another monitor or, you know, in the background and sort of tinker and do whatever else. It was fine, but yeah, it felt like it was nowhere near what it was in the first few seasons.
Look, as I'm reading it, and I'm up to chapter like 136 or something like that, so I'm a little over halfway through. There's only a little bit left to go. We're up to the part where it's like the creepy old guy on the island with all his people, and he's like turning people to stone again or whatever.
I did not like that guy.
Really fine. Very fine. Like, the first 100 chapters, actually, first 75 chapters even, were like pretty fun. I was like, yep, I can get behind this. And then it kind of like gets to a stage where they're inventing enough things where I'm like, I'm bored now. Like, and the manga is definitely in that direction. I wonder if that also correlates with the anime and where they're up to in the anime compared to the manga.
It feels very much that way. Like, it's cool, but it's like, oh, I've seen you make this thing, but just the step down three different times. Like, I'm watching these products and items evolve, and like, I do like that they use real science and real facts, and like, it is educational. Like, that's cool, but it just gets very rinse and repeaty. And yeah, I'm just struggling to be fully invested, but it sits firmly in that mid to sometimes good tier because the animation's decent. Like I said, there's a lot of attractive characters here that are probably severely, like, they can make cars and ships now, and yet they're still just walking around in like a leaf bikini. It's like, couldn't you make some proper clothes now instead? Like, I know it's catering to the anime fandoms out there, but like, come on, where's the priorities going here?
Even some of the manga panels are like, I'm like, that is not how the human body looks or physically works at all. Like, I should not be able to see an inner thigh, a whole butt cheek, a stomach, and an underboob at the same time. Like, that physically is not how the human body works, but, you know, it is what it is.
I wonder if, like, the mangaka behind Dr. Stone is, like, next door neighbors with Oda that does One Piece, because same thing. Like, you sit there and go, come on, bro. Like, settle down, you pervy Japanese man. Like, I know what you're doing here. I'm onto you. And that's the same vibes with Dr. Stone.
I'm onto you.
All right, my number 11. I'm getting married to a girl I hate my class. Very funny, very heartfelt, and very enjoyable. Like, I was surprised. Like, it started strong. It really, really grabbed me from the get-go. The comedy and the writing was consistent throughout. The heart that was on display consistent throughout. And I really enjoyed the dynamic and relationship between Akane and Saito. It was a joy to watch because they couldn't be more opposite. And yet watching them, I guess, slowly adapt and adjust to, yes, being stealthily married by their grandparents in the first episode was quite the turn that it took. But I enjoyed that it got that right out of the way right from the get-go, and then we just sort of watched this relationship, whatever you want to call it, develop, and sort of the hilarity that ensued from that.
Yeah, I think, once again, something that you kind of spoke about most weeks on the pod and, you know, said you were enjoying, good to see that it did kind of stay pretty consistent throughout the season. But putting, I guess, in our tier system here, or your tier system that we're kind of adopting, so we've gone through the bad tier, we're looking at mid to good now, and you've done your mid to good tier. I'm gonna go into mine, and I once again, I think I have some opinions that you really will disagree with, but my number 11 out of 14 for my mid to good tier, My Happy Marriage Season 2, it was just really boring. I think overall, it's too slow. I struggled to really get into it at all. And Season 1 was only just a little bit better, in my opinion. And I really thought I was going to love this, because so many people that love a lot of the romance anime that I love were singing My Happy Marriage's praises. So I really was expecting more, but maybe it was just overhyped for me.
So full spoilers, it is in a tier above where Courtney's got it sat. So I've got it sitting in the good to great tier. It is actually my number 6, could be my number 7, depending on the mood and depending on how it ends with this final episode to come. Because I did think after that slow first couple of episodes, it still ended up being that perfect blend for me of supernatural and romance. Like, I really enjoyed the story and the character progression in season 2. And I thought, you know, the introduction of the Gifted Communion and Mio's father being part of this group of baddies delivered some really good drama. It is a really easy and good watch. And seeing sort of Mio coming to her own this season, like, we sort of did make fun of her and Uka consistently during our sort of episodic recaps, because they did have a similar type of vibe where they're so meek and small and uncertain and like insecure of themselves and just how great a person they are. But seeing her sort of step up and really sort of ascend the power ranks in this season, I was like, yeah, I love this shit. Like, can't get enough of it. And so I really enjoyed seeing her find herself, and also just showing how much of a badass she is, where she does take control and run headfirst into a lot of pretty major and serious danger after years of just being shat on and downtrodden by her family. Like, I was rooting for her. And seeing the bond and love shared between Mio and Kyoka, it is super duper heartfelt, super cute. It's hard to say relatable because of the magic elements and stuff, but like, it is wholesome and it is pure. And seeing them have that first kiss and then also drop the I love yous, like, I was like, duh, my heart is dead. Like, I was in, Courts. I was in.
Those scenes were really good. The scenes where it was them together, I loved. They were so good. My issue is most of the show, they're apart. And that, I'm like, no, what are, you know, I don't care about that she's doing the dishes or whatever. You know, I want to see them fuck.
They don't fuck, Courtney. They make love.
I want to see
under the moonlight and the stars too. I'm sure.
Action. I don't want to see her going around going, "Oh, hello everybody. I'm the housekeeper." I don't care. Anyway.
You know who probably fucks in My Happy Marriage is Mama Kudo.
Yeah.
She would go to town and everyone in the house would hear it. Like all the maids and the assistants, they'd be like, yep, it's that time again. Earmuffs, kids. Like it would be a lot.
That's why they're all scared of her.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they know what she's into. Like she gets down, she probably uses her abilities to do some real freaky shit. Like it is happening. Like if we get like an offshoot and it's on focused on her, like it will be quite the page turner, I'm sure, because it would be quite the viewing experience, Courtney.
Anyway, my number 10, beating My Happy Marriage, and I really, really thought about this and thought, which one was I looking forward to more each week? And it was From Bureaucrat to Villainess, Desmond Reincarnated, which we talked about already. But I think it was just the start of this was so strong. Those first six episodes were really, really fun and a really enjoyable watch, and it just kind of lost itself a bit in the second half. Number 9, Okitsura. I fell in love with an Okinawan girl, but I just wish I knew what she was saying. This was really, really cute. It was a really clever way to promote a region as well. I enjoyed it a lot, but it did lack depth as a series overall, which is why I only made it to number 9 on my list, which is also totally fine. Like,
yeah,
you can be a series that lacks depth and still be enjoyable. Just not anything I would really recommend to anyone unless they were like, I really want to watch an anime about Okinawa. I'd be like, okay, exactly this one.
Yeah, it's like that's a very niche viewing habit you're seeking, but yeah, this is for you. It's my number 9 on the season as well. I thought it was one of the best looking anime of the season. I really love the art style and the way it was animated. I thought it was gorgeous and really pretty and just fun because it was so warm. Like the color palette and that sort of island vibe was just, it was nice and cozy every time I watched it. It was entertaining. It was educational. I did love watching Teru just navigate this Okinawan world, constantly just like getting confused with the vocal differences and, you know, what's going on in his heart and just how they operate on island time. Like it was very much a tourist anime for Okinawa. Like I have no doubt about that. And I hope maybe a lot of people do go over there and queue up at those certain times to get the tofu and what have you. But it was fine. The whole premise of the story, I thought, though, regarding the love and the romance, didn't progress at all, didn't get addressed at all, and it just ended. Like, I loved Kana, and my heart went out for her because she was crushing on Teru so hard, and yet she was just the best friend that was also the translator and helping these two potentially get closer. But yeah, there was no outcome. It ended on a nothing, and I doubt very, very much we're going to get a second season of this.
And you know what? I think I'm fine with that. I think, but towards the end, I was like, all right, let's wrap it up, guys. Come on, take it home. My number 8, which is still in the mid to good tier, is Baban Baban Ban Vampire, which makes more sense in Japanese because it's Babam 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 Vampire. So it all kind of flows. But this is, I want to say, a parody BL vampire rom-com supernatural mystery high school anime about an old man in a bathhouse. Yes, it was good. I laughed out loud at this so many times. I loved that it made fun of lots of other anime and their tropes. It was comedically really, really clever and just a fun comedy if you think dick jokes are funny and if you like vampires and the thought of a guy that's like, I'm a vampire, and the family he's like living with are like, yeah, all right, buddy, they're like, yeah, but he's a vampire, he's so a vampire.
I kept forgetting that this was part of the season, and it's weird because it's on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know how it just didn't like pop up in my, you know, recommendeds or watch this, because that's all my Netflix is these days, is like anime and cooking shows. And for some reason it didn't get recommended, which is surprising. And I remember you talked about it early in the season, but then you didn't really say anything until now. So I totally forgot about it, but I'm happy that you enjoyed it and it nailed the dick jokes and the tone, because from what you just described it as, I'm like, maybe I need to find some time to give this a cop because it sounds fun.
it's just silly. It's silly and fun and funny. And the vampire isn't like in love with the boy, but he kind of, it's weird, but it's funny. I liked it. Good parody. And then my number 7, which is mid to good tier, my last of the mid to good tier, Flower and Asura. And it was good. It was really wholesome. I liked the characters up until the very end. So this series did a really, really good job of building up this tension and this world and these characters and this storyline. But then at the very end, one of them gets kidnapped by her own family that we had no idea about until 5 minutes before it happened. And the ending was really, really rushed. And I feel like they could have taken their time more here. That's the point of the whole series, is, you know, taking your time and doing things properly. Also, the queer baiting was really hard to ignore.
Yeah, so Flower and Asura, that was my number one throughout 90% of this season. Like, I loved it. I loved the world. I loved the themes. I loved the story. And like you just said, Courtney, the way they just pulled the handbrake in these last few episodes, it felt like I was watching something completely different all of a sudden. So it's sitting at my number 5 as far as my overall rankings for the winter season. Like, yeah, it felt like it was nearly flawless for 90% of the season, but it was so fumbled at the end. Like, the conflict between Mizuki and her family, which we didn't even know until right then. She's like, oh, by the way, I'm like I'm a potential suitor and like heiress to like a $1 billion franchise. You know, all these things, my family makes and sells all that. So I'm kind of loaded. And then she goes to sort of tell her grandmother that, you know, she can't make her brother's wedding because she's got this very important recital that day. And then grandma's like, well, fuck you, Mizuki, we're locking you up. And you're like, what? Is this the same show? It was so disconnected and jarring compared to the rest of it. And that really irked me. I'm happy in a way that they wrapped that up probably way too quickly, to be honest. Like, I wouldn't have minded if they actually explored that a little bit more and made us care and understand about this family. But instead, they all like muster their courage up and they go and talk to a brother first, who then gets them in to see the grandma. And they're like, you know, we're taking her home. And then she has a really good like recital of a poem and her grandma feels. And then she's like, all right, see you later. And she's like, oh, okay, cool. So that ended really, really quickly. Yeah, getting Yuri baited on the beach in like the last episode too, I was like, oh, okay, I thought this might actually end up in a little sweet romance here, but instead it's like, ha ha, platonic suckers. And you're like, ah, okay. So they were really messy and uneven. And then we don't even get a taste of the NHK tournament that they've been training and preparing for the entire season. I'm like, come on, man. Like, I was loving this world. And I was so immersed and so invested. Like, this was a Brendan anime until the finish line, where it was a little herky jerky and just really messy. But I liked that it was very real. I liked that the characters were relatable and dealing with very relatable emotions a lot of the time, which really resonated with me throughout parts of this season. The animation was fantastic, especially during those poetry and recital based scenes, where you start seeing the characters in these worlds start to feel the words that are getting spoken. Like, gorgeous, and some of my favorite scenes of this entire season. The voice acting was great, and I still feel it is one of the better new anime to come out the last 12 months, but man, those last few episodes were a mess.
Yeah, it just, I don't know, very strange. Just
so strange.
The tone completely flipped.
It felt like someone was the author and like, man, I've really got to do a shit. Do you mind just finishing this for me? They've nipped off to the bathroom, and then the guy beside him is just like, yeah, this sounds pretty cool. Kidnapping, family drama, done. Like, that's how, like, it just was so out of the norm and it just didn't work for me.
That's exactly what happened. Brendan, that's what happened. You solved the mystery.
I am the human embodiment of that guy that solves everything, like that you're about to embark on in the spring season. Like, I am the Western version of that guy. We've cracked the case. Okay, I feel a lot better knowing that now. All right, back to you. No, that is the end of your mid to good tier.
Oh, God. Okay. So we're going to cut it again with a real quick little award again for the best opening and ending of the season, that Brendan has named Opening Hype, Ending Snipe, which I really like. Good job.
Yeah, I was going hard on the wordplay at like 1 a.m. on Wednesday morning. And I thought, you know what? Yeah, opening hype and then that ending just snipes you like straight in the heart. Like, oh, man, that hit hard. So that was my thought process here. So, yeah, what is your opening or ending of the season, Courtney?
I'm going to go with my ending first because I always find the endings are, you know, the opening really gets you into it and the ending, sometimes you turn it off before it's done. But for me, it was actually Wonderful World by Anteam, which is the ending of Honey Lemon Soda. They also did the opening to Honey Lemon Soda, and it's just, they're just a cool J-pop boy band. And it, like, this would get stuck in my head all the time. Just a fun little bop.
It was a very fun bop. And I will admit, it was hard to sort of land on like ending of the season for me because there was not very memorable ones. And I went through and like listened and watched to like 40 different ones. And this was right up there until I remembered. I'm like, oh, that's right. Blue Box is still kicking around because I really vibed with Tomu, which is the Contrast. Sorry. So Tomu is the artist and the song they did is Contrast. And it was just beautiful. And the trailer was focusing on Hina as well, obviously best girl for me. And it was just a really nice accompaniment. I thought the new intro for Core 2 for Blue Box was great. But those bops by Anteam for Honey Lemon Soda, though, they are toe tappers.
So good. But my opening of the season, and I think anyone could have predicted this, is Reawaker by Lisa and Felix from Stray Kids, who I adore. I never skipped this opening once, and it was always stuck in my head for the past 3 months. Like, I was listening to this song a lot of the time. I really, really love this opening.
It was a banger, and it is probably like the 1B to my 1A. Like, same thing. Like, I listened to it without fail. I've got it in a few playlists on Spotify. The film clip that they've shot is fantastic as well. And like, these two people are just powerhouses. So yeah, that is an honorable mention because I ultimately ended up with Hyaka Ryurin, aka Splendid Beauty by Lila Ikuta for The Apothecary Diaries Season 2 because, again, an absolute toe tapper, and those opening bars just got me in the mood straight off the bat. And again, on my Spotify playlist, it is a good time. And also like the animation that accompanied that too, stunning.
Yeah, they really ate with that animation. It was fantastic.
So shout out to our winners for opening hype, ending snipe of the 2025 winter season. I just wanted another excuse to say that. All right, so moving into my top 10 now. So this is good to potentially great tier. If we're talking ongoings, I'd plug Shangri-La Frontier somewhere in there. I'd plug Amagami Sisters somewhere in the back half that we've already talked about because it was not the best. It did have, though, I will say, in, you know, for the first half and the second half, so Core 1 and Core 2 of the Amagami Sisters. Again, the openings and the endings of that anime were also very impressive, I've got to say.
Yeah,
or the best thing about it.
wasn't mad at the openings and endings.
Yeah, I do love when the animators get crafty and like incorporate the singing into the characters, like you see them singing at you. I think that's just a fun little wrinkle to an opening or an ending. But anyway, my number 10, Amiku MD Doctor Detective, Courtney, quite the surprise packet. It genuinely is House the Anime, and I loved it. Really, really enjoyed the intersection of medical and mystery. And Dr. Takeo Amiku, she was a great, 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 great MC, fleshed out, flawed, and brilliant. The two-part episode titled Night Where Angels Dance was some of the best storytelling of this season, and also some of the most emotional storytelling of this season. I was bawling my eyes out at the end of part two of this because it got so heavy and so grounded, and it tied into like kids dying, like they're terminal and she can't do anything to save their lives. And she's like, oh my God, like just make it end. Amiku, please save the children. But it was so good.
Do it for the kids.
For the kids.
This one, I think I lived vicariously through you with this. I don't think I would pick it up. I'm glad I didn't, just because I already was watching a lot. There was something like, maybe I could have not watched Zenshu and watched this instead, but it is what it is. I'm not going to go back and watch it, but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Surprisingly enjoyable. And yeah, sitting at my number 10, obviously Akitsura was my number 9. So we're going to jump to my number 8 and your number 5, minor spoilers. Talking about Sakamoto Days, I thought it was a faithful adaptation that was fun and enjoyable. The main cast was really complicated well by the villain of the week formula that we got very used to very quickly. And it constantly led to like, what the fuck moments, whether it be crazy violence, crazy just insanity, crazy zany. Like it was just a good melting pot of different moods and vibes. The season did dip in the middle for me, but I felt it was overridden by a really strong final few episodes. And like we were doing the weekly recap of this, and I thought we still had like an episode to go, and then realized that that was, you know, core one finale. I'm like, oh, okay. But I'm ready for more in July. Taro Sakamoto is a man's man who I absolutely love, adore, and respect, even if he was constantly breaking the family's no-kill code. But yeah, Sakamoto days, really enjoyed it, really happy with sort of the end product, and feel that they sort of firmly stuck the landing for season one.
I love a silly show, and that's what Sakamoto Days is. It doesn't try to be anything it's not. It is unapologetically itself. It just is action, comedy, family, really, really strong family thematics, which I really adored in this. I don't care what anyone says. I thought Sakamoto Days was great. I loved the animation. I thought it suited it perfectly. I loved the use of slow-mo. I loved the use of texture and color. I really have no complaints about this. It was great.
Yeah, double thumbs up. Really enjoyable. Happy for what we got on screen. And I think the overall product, really good, really strong. And it seems like the world, for the most part, really enjoyed it as well. Okay, so my number seven sitting in the good to great tier. So this would fall into sort of, we're more in just the great now. I'd say yeah. Probably good to great would be Emiku and Okitsura and then maybe Sakamoto Days. But I feel seven, and we already talked about my six, which was My Happy Marriage. But my number seven, which is your number five, I Have a Crush at Work. I really enjoyed this mature, adult, funny, heartfelt, relatable, honest romance. Like Yui and Masagu as our sort of two primary leads, I really got attached to them really quickly. And I liked that it was just good grown-up romance that was, I don't know if it'd be relatable because I haven't had any work-related romances, but like it's relatable in like in the feelings, in the emotions and the life that they're dealing with. Like I liked that it was mature and respectful of our time as far as being a more adult-based focus with the content and the tone.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. This is my number six. So the thing that I really liked about it, and I think you did hit it on the head there, while you might not relate to it in terms of an office romance, I think we can all relate to it as adults in relationships where, you know, we're in a relationship where we're not living with someone, but they come over after work and we have a few drinks and we have dinner and we chat, and then, you know, like we might not see them for a couple of days and then we hang out again. It's just nice. And, you know, it is an adult office romance, which of course already is a thumbs up in my book. But unlike the previous season's office romance, 365 Days to the Wedding, which was shit, this one is really good because not only do we get Yui and Masagu, our main couple, but we also get another couple thrown in there. It's fun. We get to see these dynamics. It's well written, funny, actually believable. My only gripe, the only thing that really upset me with this, is that it's not available on any legal streaming services in Australia.
Which really surprises me because the animation quality, the voice acting, the soundtrack, like it is all very, very high tier. So you'd think even someone like a High Dive who do grab those diamonds in the rough a lot of the times, that it's not on there. Hopefully that changes because I feel this is a romance story that needs more people to check it out because yeah, it's enjoyable and I like the realness of it. Like you said, it focuses on a lot of those downtime and those quieter moments instead of it just being, you know, grand romantic gesture after grand romantic gesture. It's like you said, they're coming home, chilling with each other after work, having a meal, having a drink, like real shit. And I loved it. And I hope we can somehow get more of this on also a major streaming service, please.
Please, I'm begging. It's so good. If you haven't seen it, I honestly think this was one of my biggest surprises of the season. Cannot recommend enough.
Yeah, me too. I'm right there with you in lockstep. Like, chuck this on your watch list if you haven't checked it out already. Like, yes, it is harder to come by, but it is well worth the hunt to try and track this down. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, I mentioned already my number six was My Happy Marriage. We've unpacked that. So we're now about to shift into sort of the top five shortly, but you've got one more you wanted to mention that you've got in sort of the good to great tier, Courtney.
Yes. So Toilet Bound Hanako-kun 2. I don't think I could ever not be excited for a season of Toilet Bound Hanako-kun. Perfect music, great art style that every time I was watching it, Dan would walk past and be like, God, I love the art style of this show. And I'm like literally every single time I was watching an episode. Characters are great. The story is fantastic. The voice acting, I think of all of the anime I have ever watched in my life, the voice acting in Toilet Bound Hanako-kun comes into like the top three. Damn. Solidly. Like, damn. Really fantastic voice acting. Like,
big Japanese, praise there, Courtney. Big, yeah, praise.
Japanese voice acting as well. Like, as someone who can speak the language, like, this is hands down some of my favorite. The season was really fun. Generally, the last arc was a little bit meh, but it all ties in together and works with the overarching plot, so all is forgiven.
I need to find some time to watch this because I have enjoyed my forays with this world and these characters, and I know how glowingly you constantly speak of it that, like, I get a little bit of, well, not jealousy, but I'm like, man, like a bit of FOMO. Like, I need to watch it, and, yeah, I've got to find some downtime to cue this up because, yeah, it's just a cool world that I want to be part of. And the voice acting part really, really spoke to me just now. So I'm like, man, I need to get in. So number four.
Yes.
But definitely in the great. You wouldn't put it in the good. Like, that's at the great tier. That's the great end.
Yeah, I think it's great. Definitely. It could be a maze, except for that last arc, I think, kind of, for me, was not as, I guess, appealing. But okay, it was still fun.
Yeah, still fine. Still number four for the season for you. Okay, before we start sort of jumping into the final, the heavy hitters, the panelists and the award winners as far as, you know, gold, silver, bronze. I don't know what happens after bronze. I don't know what fourth and fifth are, but think of a medal that can sort of tie into that. We're going to do another award, which I'm calling Stealth Drop Mega Pop. That is the best surprise of the season. I have gone with, and this was hard because the one that you've given best surprise of season two, I was wanting to put it there too, but I wanted to try and be a little different because we don't want universality here. We want a little bit of chalk. We want some differences. So I've gone with the 100 girlfriends who really, 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 really love you. And I'll talk more about that in a little while's time. But Courtney, who is your, or what is your best surprise of the season?
Mine was Medalist. Just, we're going to talk about it more. And I think I have to wait because I love this show. I love Medalist. But where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe?
That is a deep cut right there. Holy shit. That might be one of the best things I ever hear you say. Shout out to that 90s banger, Cotton Eye Joe. And I've also accepted Here's Johnny, potentially. Also, yeah, another banger from that era. But anyway, yeah, we'll talk more about those two anime in question in a second. But shout out to those award winners. So we're moving into the amazed tier. I'd put Blue Box in here if we were going to sort of rank those ongoings because I really felt that it stuck the landing. Loved the progression in season two. Loved the introduction of additional characters, expanding out that world. And it's just some of the best realist romance doing the rounds. We already mentioned my number five, which is Flower and Asura. So we're going to jump into how we're going to do this because it's my number four, but it is like not your number four, so to speak. Do we sort of bury the lead and you explain it, or do I talk about it and then, I don't know, what do you want to do here?
You just go number four because I've already done my number four, and then we can go 3, 2, 1, but we'll have our ones separate.
Okay, I like that idea. Okay, so my number four, The Apothecary Diaries Season 2. I feel it is the perfect blend of entertainment and intrigue, and it's anchored by the relationship between Jinchi and Mao Mao and the whole will they, won't they type of vibe. Like, it is a great hook that just drags you along, but it's like you're almost like smelling the scent from the bakery and you're sort of floating your way there because it is so good. It is so just, I'm so curious and so enamored with this world and these characters. I love everything about this anime, like, and everything about this anime I feel is a maze tier worthy, like the plot, the characters, both the main and the ancillary. Like, I love that we do get such a wide introduction to people from all walks of life, and they always take the time to let us know who they are, why they're here, and potentially even some backstory, which is good. There's a lot of depth there. Animation, phenomenal. Voice acting, phenomenal. Soundtrack, phenomenal. I feel like everything attached to this apothecary world is done at the highest standard and level possible, and I love it. And like, my 4 through 1, depending on my mood, could jumble like throughout the day, because it is great. I feel that all four that I'm about to talk to and the three that you're about to talk to, like, they're all winners in my opinion. But yeah, my number four is the Apothecary Diaries.
Yes. My number three, which is coincidentally also your number three, Solo Leveling Season 2, fun, high tension, gore, violence. I really enjoy Solo Leveling as a brain-off anime. It has beautiful art, fun, like a fun premise. I did just get a bit tired of the fighting, and I get that that's the point. This is, you know, it's a shonen fighting anime. It just isn't my favorite genre, but I think overall, every time I thought about watching Solo Leveling or the next episode, I'd be like, okay. And then I would watch, I'd be like, oh shit, this is actually really, really good. Like, so yeah, that's why it's on my number three.
Yeah, so it's your number three, it's my number three. It is the definitive power fantasy anime. I don't think there's any doubts or questions about that. Like, it is pretty much the biggest anime in the world these days. Like, it's breaking Crunchyroll all the time. It's the most highest rated thing on Crunchyroll, the highest reviewed, yada, yada, yada. Like, it is killing it. And I feel it did deliver on all fronts in season two. Like, A1 killed it again with the animation. It was stunning, and it felt like it was ripped straight from those gorgeous manhwa panels that you just mentioned, Courtney. Especially when it came to those epic battles, like, holy guacamole, was it well animated in those scenes. And when you combine that with an absolute humper of a soundtrack, like, they knew when to quiet these things down, they knew when to build it up. And the fact they were using like real musical tracks throughout this season as well, and in season one too, like, it just really added to the weight and the impact of what was going on. And I love this ride right through to the end. I thought the battle that Jinu had with Beru the Ant King was great. They actually expanded on that pretty heavily from the manhwa. Like, the manhwa only goes for like four pages, that battle. And yet that fight went for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes in sort of the anime itself. So that was kind of cool. They took some liberties there. But I really enjoyed the sort of the finalization of the Jeju Island raid. I thought it was also nice in this season to see our man Sung Jinu get some genuine character development. Like you said, Courtney, like, it is all gas, no breaks. It is fighting all the time, like Jinu fighting around the world type of vibes. But we did see him show some vulnerability in relation to his mum. And, you know, obviously the main reason why he is leveling up is to try and, you know, find these items to bring his mum out of this, you know, endless sleep. And so seeing that moment, seeing him sort of break down and be humanized a little bit and cry when his mum woke up, I thought that was really, really nice. It was gorgeously animated again. And so it did show that there is still a human under this badass monarch that was chosen by the system. But also wanted to shout out to Isil and Chahayin for being the best girls and badasses in their own right. I love them. I will die for them, even though they probably don't need me to do anything, being, you know, badasses. And I'm just, I don't know, I'm an F rank. I'm even below the E ranks. But you know what? I'll swing an axe if it means keeping them safe or getting a smile on their face. But yeah, Solo Leveling Season 2, my number three, Courtney's number three, a good time all around.
Yes. My number two is Medalist. Once again, hello, where did this come from? What, how had I not heard of this before? It was just hidden away on Disney Plus. It wasn't even on my initial plan to watch list. The only reason I heard of it was because Brendan mentioned it randomly, and I looked at the score. I was like, oh, it's actually scoring pretty highly. I think I have to check this out. I'm so glad I did. It's one of my absolute favorites from this season. A truly emotional story driven by deep characters that have real goals and aspirations. And if you didn't care about ice skating before, you do now.
Yeah, 100%. And I will add some further thoughts on Medalist in a hot minute, because I'll share my number two. We talked about our Stealth Drop Mega Pop winners just before, and that was obviously Medalist. And my number two, the 100 Girlfriends Who Really, 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 Really Love You. Holy shit, Courtney, what a glow up this horny harem thrill ride has embarked on in season two. I don't know what happened behind closed doors after season one, but whatever it was, it worked, as season two was damn near perfect. Like, maybe again, the showrunner went to the bathroom and someone else jumped in and sort of finished the story. Maybe that's sort of what we're finding out is the constant here when things evolve. Like, there's a bowel movement, you know the story is going to be for the better after that potentially. So yeah, season two of 100 Girlfriends, the animation from Byberry, phenomenal. The laughs, the parodies, the fan service, the references, and the new girlfriends all came together to deliver some of the best television of the season for me. The humor and the gags, they were both equal parts hilarious and insane, but they knew when to, like, it wasn't just belting over the head of, like, joke after joke after joke after joke. Like, they knew when to lean into it. They knew when to step back and let some of this heartfelt sort of actual romance and genuine love sort of evolve and develop and be serious when they need to. But this season, Courtney, it blew me the hell away. I love the new additions to the Rentaro family. Knowing that we're only 11% of the way to that 100 girlfriend total makes me so happy. If season 2 is the new standard for this show, it's going to end up being a top 10 all-timer for me. Like, it is that good. I love it that much. And I want to also shout out Nano and Hikari still being the best girlfriends. But yeah, season 2 of 100 Girlfriends, I did not expect it to be anywhere near as good as it was. It has no right to be anywhere near as good as it was, because it was so entertaining from front to back, and I can't get enough of this world.
I just, part of me is like, do I just bite the bullet and watch it? And I think I should, because everyone is talking about it. Everyone loves this show. And, you know, if it is as good at kind of parodying these shitty harems, like, you know, Rent-A-Girlfriend, whatever it is, which I'm not going to say is shitty, but you know what I mean, then maybe I need to give it a shot.
I think you do. My only thought, like, season 1 was fine, but season 2, like I've said, is next level. So almost maybe if you can find like a recap of season 1 and then jump into season 2, because season 2 is like its final form. Like, it is evolved. It is a beast. It is Charizard and the shit out of this place. Like, it is so good, Courtney. I love it. And it is just so fun. Like, it is hilarious, and it has no right to be this hilarious this consistently. And I love that there is sort of the underlying story where, you know, Rentaro has been given this ability where, yes, he needs to find his 100 soulmates, but if one of these 100 don't fall in love with him, he can die. So there is like some stakes in the back of this where this poor boy could potentially get to 99 and the 100 says, nah, sorry, bro, like, you're not my type. And then he dies. Like, imagine if that's how it ends. But holy shit, 100 girlfriends, I love you.
So wild. All right, I'm going to get into my number one, which is Apothecary Diaries season 2, my absolute favorite anime this season. I talked about it almost every single week in the last quarter, and for good reason. Each week's episode was so well planned, and in every single aspect, like, you know, we had the art, the animation, the stories, but those like threads of information and relationships between the characters, everything was so intentional and so utilized that, you know, I would see something in the first episode and then 12 episodes later, I'm like, oh, right. Like, that's how it's connected. That's why it's important. And I just can't fault it. There is no negative thing I can say about this show. The way that all of them fold together to explore and examine a historical world as well is phenomenal. And I absolutely cannot wait to have more Mao Mao. Of all the detectives that I've spoken about over the past 2 weeks, Mao Mao is my favorite detective.
She is the best. And I like that, you know, they don't sexualize her. She's a gorgeous girl in her own right, but you see her around all these concubines, like, she's like a foot shorter than them. You know, she's not busty and showing her skin like all these other gorgeous characters are. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that too, but she is as gorgeous as she is smart, as she is intelligent. And I just love her curiosity. I think that's probably my favorite thing about her. Like, she's so curious about the world and so switched on and wants to learn everything. And seeing her get excited about, you know, mushrooms and random dried goat's testicles and all that other stuff that she gets hyped about and stuff. Like, she's just the best. And she's one of my favorite characters, not only from this season, but like from the last few years, like ever since she crossed our path. Like, I've loved this girl and I've loved this world. And even Jinchi in his own, like I love that he's got this air of mystery about him. And yes, he is probably one of the most handsome men on the anime planet, but like, he's a good dude and he's got a good heart.
Yes. And that's all that we really need.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. And it's landing on Netflix very soon, Apothecary Diaries. So yes. Anyone for some reason that doesn't have a Crunchyroll sub and have been waiting for some more stuff to make their way to Netflix, Apothecary Diaries season 1 will be on there. If it hasn't dropped already, I know it's like imminent. So yep. Add that to your watch list immediately.
Yes. What's your number one there?
All right. My number one It is your number two. My number one is Medalist. In a star-making performance, Inori just flew right on in on her skates and flew right on into my heart and has not left that area since. Like, she landed a double Shao Kao right to my feels, and I could not be more happy that she stuck the landing on that one, because stunning animation combined with an absolute toe-tapper of an opening as well, one of my favorite OPs of the season, with a story that was perfectly paced. I loved that they were doing these incremental time jumps when they needed to. Like, we didn't see Inori go from her first day of training and then every other day. You know, we jumped like a full 9 months ahead in the story and a part of it, which I was very thankful for. I love a good, relatable underdog story in any medium. And this one had that in spades. And that's anchored by the relationship between Tsukasa and Inori. Like, I was cheering and teary-eyed, whether it be tears of joy or tears of sorrow, just about every single episode for Medalist. I was so shocked and so surprised that this was as good as it was, because, you know, Disney, they're not known for having like an anime stable. Like, they've got some hitters over there, don't get me wrong, but this came out like with no hype behind it. It just stealth dropped on Disney one day and people were talking about it glowingly. I'm like, I'm jumping in. And I'm happy I did, because it's so good. I'm so excited for what's to come in season two. As Medalist, even after like 13 episodes, I think that first season was, I feel it's one of the best sports anime I've ever seen already after like one season.
Yeah, I cannot praise this show enough. Even when I was doing this list, I was like, do I put Medalist or Apothecary Diaries in number one, which goes in number two? It was a tough choice. The only thing that really brought Apothecary Diaries a little bit more to the front was just the fact that I had talked about it every single week and, you know, really every episode was so different yet so, you know, tied together. And Medalist was so close behind on its tails, the way that they not only told a really successful sports anime story, but the fact that it was the story of someone younger. A lot of the time we'll get sports anime about high schoolers or university students or even adults, Yuri on Ice. But this one is about a child, like a little girl who has a dream that she wants to achieve and the coach that's helping her to do it and, you know, kind of uncovering more about them as they grow together. So it's really, really beautiful.
It was really beautiful. And even just the other kids we meet along the way and getting their backstories and seeing that, you know, like they are just kids. Like, I like they didn't sort of grow up. Like, you know, we watch a lot of anime that is focused on kids and high school students, but they grow them up like maturity wise and show them almost as adults and they handle things differently. But we're seeing these kids crying and getting emotional and dealing with insecurities and learning about the world throughout this season. And I loved it. I think my favorite little parts was just before she'd go out to do her routines and she'd grab Tsukasa's like hoodie sort of, what would you call them? Like hoodie strings?
Strings tie.
Yeah, like the strings of his hoodie. And that was like her little grounding, calming moment before the big stage sort of was thrust upon her. And I loved just the real believable relationship. Like, it is some of the best storytelling of this season. And yeah, it's got such a special and fond place in my heart after one season. Like, I love it. I love these characters. And yeah, like I said, I cannot wait for a season two, because I love that they've already confirmed we've got a second season on the way, unlike a lot of these other anime we've talked about that we may never see more of again.
Yes. Shout out to Medalist and Apothecary Diaries season two. But Brendan, let's get into our last little award here. Do you want to read it out? Because you worked so hard to come up with this name.
I appreciate you throwing me the mic on this one. Yeah, so this award is called our Certified Sakura Superstar. It's going out to the best character of the season. So who was your best character of the 2025 winter season, Courtney?
I really thought hard about this because I was like, you know, Jinshi, he's hot. We could have had Sung Jinu, also hot. Inori, really inspiring. But no, for me, it was Taro Sakamoto from Sakamoto Days. How can you not love a family man? He's a great dad, dedicated husband, like to the point where he quit his career to be with the woman that he loves, which is real dedication. And he can turn hot in the blink of an eye. I'm in love. What a cool dude.
Very justified winner there. Like, yeah, Taru Sakamoto. I gushed about him during our sort of recap of where it landed in our rankings here. Big fan of the guy. The only thing that probably held me from getting him like a nomination or a win for this season is, like I said, he sort of looks the other way when it comes to the no kill code, that his family, like, he's a family man. He lives and breathes that life, and then he's snapping necks and cashing checks.
Brendan, you cannot tell me that you have not broken a rule once or twice in your life.
Broken a couple of rules just today. Like, I'm a badass, Courtney. Do you even know me?
So I think we can forgive him.
We can.
Yeah. What about you?
He is a great guy and someone that we could all aspire to be. So I was having a hard time with this as well. Like, I wasn't sure if I wanted to go a low-hanging fruit and just like shout out the prettiest girl or the hottest guy around or whatnot. So I thought long and hard about this, and I've landed on Alina Clover, who we spoke about earlier from the fantastic anime, I May Be a Guild Receptionist, But I'll Solo Any Boss to Clock Out on Time. I find all she wants is to live that simple, quiet life, free of stress and overtime, don't we all? And will do whatever she can to achieve those goals, even donning and becoming the executioner and single-handedly defeating raid bosses, not only for the greater good, but also for her to try and continue to live that quiet life and get home and just chill out, have a nice meal, jump into bed, read a book, you know, simple, cozy, great. We all want that. She's also cute and sassy as hell, which I also really appreciate. Like, she gives as much as she gets, like when she is just working that front counter and people are coming in and sort of talking down to her, just being the lowly guild receptionist, she claps back and she's giving it to it like she's quick as a whip. So I love that about her. She's very loyal to the ones that she actually does let in and care about, and I think she's secretly a bit of a softie and a romantic at heart. So you know what, she checks all those boxes for me. So Alina Clover is my certified Sakura superstar of winter 2025,
and I can respect any person that wants to kind of stick it to the man and, you know, make sure they're leaving their job at the scheduled time, if not earlier.
Yep. So shout out to that. Maybe we could do a quick recap. Like, explain to me, Courtney, what was your top five anime of the winter season?
My top five anime of this winter 2025 season was Sakamoto Days at number 5, Toilet Bound Hanako-kun season 2 at number 4, Solo Leveling season 2 at number 3, Medalist at number 2, and Apothecary Diaries season 2 at number 1.
Hell of a list. And my top 5, Flower and Asura at number 5, The Apothecary Diaries season 2 at number 4, Solo Leveling at number 3, The 100 Girlfriends Who Really, 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 Really Love You at number 2, and Medalist at number 1 for the 2025 winter season.
Whoa, it was a lot of anime.
So too much anime, if I'm being completely honest, Courtney.
I'm glad that you've cut down on spring 2025. I'm glad you've taken some of those numbers out.
I'm hoping it's going to be more quality as opposed to quantity in the spring 2025 season. But listeners, viewers, Segoy Squad, you'll find out if you continue on this journey with us over future episodes, because we're going to be doing deep dives not only on Witch Watch every week, which is our anime in focus for the spring season, but also be sort of sprinkling in our ongoing thoughts on an assortment of anime we're going to be covering in the spring 2025 season, which I'm very excited about, Courtney.
Yes, Scott, I'm excited. I'm having a quick peek at some of the things that are already out, and I'm very, very keen to dive in.
Mm-hmm. You and me both. But Courtney, any final comments before we shut the Segoy studio down for another week?
Yes. So we got an announcement today from Animanga, which is the Melbourne anime and manga, I guess, convention, because Sydney has Smash and Melbourne has Animanga. But next year, 2026, there is going to be an Animanga Con in both Melbourne and Sydney next year. So if you live in Sydney like I do, I'm sure you are delighted at this news. If you live around, if you don't live in Melbourne or Sydney, but you're looking at getting to one of those cons, now you have a bit more of an option to go to either Melbourne or Sydney, which is great news.
Very, very good news. We'll be at both of these. Obviously, the Sydney event is until 2026, but obviously we've got Melbourne Animaga coming in the next few months and we'll be running around there doing our thing. So if you see us, be sure to say hello. But yeah, exciting times. I love more cons.
Yes, they're so fun. It's mm-hmm. a good time. Mm-hmm. What did you want to shout out, Brendan?
I wanted to just say, are you curious about Devil May Cry? Because we're going to be doing a deep dive on More Than Hentai this coming week, where I'll be joined by content creator superstar Zombies Love Bacon to unpack all of Dante's demon slaying shenanigans. So that episode will be out probably middle of the week to get our thoughts and feelings on Devil May Cry now that it has landed and come in very hot onto Netflix overnight.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I saw that the first episode is live. I'm like, okay, I've got to watch it. I need Dante. Anyway, thank you to our producers, Orny Duffo and Matthew C. Your support means the world to us. We love having you here. And if you join our Patreon at one of the two paid tiers, you can also join as a part of our live audience whenever we record an episode of the podcast, which is super fun. You get access as well to a secret Patreon chat in our Discord server, which is very fun, plus a bunch of other perks, including merch like pins and some shirts.
Yeah, you get a whole host of swag. We've got three tiers available at patreon.com/Sakura Society. And if you wanted to get some other merch from our friends over at Ice Tea Aesthetics, you can do so over there where Anime Meets Streetswear. Go cop their free rent drop immediately. They've got some fantastic tees, crew necks and hoodies and hats over there. And when you're checking out, be sure to use code SakuraSociety5. That is the number 5. So SakuraSociety5 at checkout to save yourself some cashish on your order. But Courtney, that brings us to the end of our 2025 winter recap. What a journey it's been.
I can't believe it's over, but I'm also kind of glad that it's over and we can get into something new, because there are a few things I'm glad to leave behind. Some things I'm a bit sad about, but overall, it was a good season.
Yeah. Goodbye, Zenshu, you disappointment. But whether your anime be subbed, dubbed, or still yet to come, enjoy yourself and much love to all the gorgeous waifus and husbandos out there. Goodbye.
Mata ne.